Hello, I'm Bruce Edwards, and welcome to this podcast produced by the International Monetary Fund. In today's program, ActionAid Chair Nirajai Gumbanjanda talks about making macroeconomics work for women.
It's baby steps. As long as the whole financial inclusion and women's participation is still from the premise of women as consumers, we need women to be owning, to be in the decision-making table, to be shareholders.
The benefits of expanding women's participation in the economy are clear. More women in the labor force results in faster economic growth. Yet women around the globe continue to face barriers, like having far less access to formal financial institutions than men and bearing a disproportionate responsibility for unpaid care work. I sat down with ActionAid's Nirajai Gumbanjanda after a panel discussion on making macroeconomics work for women at the IMF World Bank annual meetings last month. We've been talking about trying to integrate women in the workforce for many years now. Are we making any progress? And why does it seem like it's such a hard sell? The benefits are clear now. Why is it so hard to get this done?
I think what was exciting as part of this discussion was the shift in the narrative, was for this conversation to be about how macroeconomics works for women, which is very different from integrating gender equality into macroeconomics, because it shifts and repositions the issue of gender equality and the role of women as the substantive and not as an instrument of achieving growth. It's not an easy shift. It requires us to be very practical in terms of the key elements, in terms of the benefits, and also in terms of what the ministries of finance have to do in order to realize the ethos of why they have to do that. They have to know that it's about the total well-being of their nations. It's about achieving the development outcomes, which are more than the growth outcomes. So that, I think, is a piece which is very critical. And for some of us, like ActionAid, who work with women in communities, it's an issue that enables us to surface and place in the policy conversation the unrecognized and undervalued and unpaid care work, for instance.
And this did come up in the discussion earlier today, the issue of, you know, there are a lot of things that women do that are not necessarily captured in the way that we currently measure growth. Do you think that we need to take another look at the way that we measure growth?
I think we need to, because the measurement of just the economic financial indicator of surplus, or it's not sufficient, because for women in communities, when they are saying, "Has our economic situation improved?" they are also looking at whether they have quality access to basic services like running water, food security, education for their children, sustainable fuel and energy sources so that they don't have to walk the long distances to fetch firewood. So it might not be measured that they have an extra penny and an extra shilling in their pocket, but the overall health and well-being of that household and the dynamics and potential and capabilities of that household has shifted. And this is where I think the whole conversation around growth has been so reduced to, I'm not an economist, I am a village woman who happens to be an international human rights lawyer, where we need to find other language that sufficiently describes what those values are. And yes, it might not be according to convention, but who said that improving the world has to be by the status quo. If we have to improve our world, if we have to meet those SDGs, we can't do it by scaling up status quo. We need to be creative. We need to dare to introduce nuancing, to introduce new language, new thinking.
Like what? I mean, what are some of the areas that you think that we should be focused on?
Let's talk about tax justice, and not only models of taxation, but tax justice, which goes beyond the models, because then that enables us to look at the distribution issue, who is impacted by one model or the other, if there is tax avoidance or tax evasion or other leakages within the economy where the revenue is not there and the service has to be provided, and that service like healthcare is no longer provided by the local health clinic, is task shifted into the household. And that task shifting is care work for women. So it's to be able to draw all these linkages in order to respond to the reality that we know. So it's very exciting that the International Monetary Fund starts to talk about inequalities beyond income inequalities, to talk about gender inequalities, to talk about diversity. Because really the whole conversation around economic empowerment for women has been so micro, but there's nothing micro about women's empowerment. It's very macro. And all these macro policies impact on the reality at household level, and those realities at household level should inform the macroeconomic policies.
And the policies that, the macroeconomic policies that the IMF have been talking about for quite some time now are, you know, infrastructure investment and domestic revenue mobilization. And that translates, I think, to a certain degree of what you're talking about.
And part of, just to stick with infrastructure, investment in infrastructure, if we put a gender lens, if we put a prioritization of women's care work into the infrastructure, it might mean that the IMF technical advice to a government might be to say, okay, you want to build a road from the city center to go to country X or to go to this province in order to facilitate trade or movement of goods and services. But why can't you also maybe, yes, prioritize this, but look at staggering so that you also prioritize rural electrification or solar panels in rural areas so that women are able to have an energy source which unleashes their potential to spend more time on their farms, in their gardens, producing more. It means women are able to produce for household consumption, the vegetables, but are also able to have time to be more in the productive sector. So those linkages are very critical for the work that we do. And yes, we need those roads because women have to go with their produce to the market. We do cross-border trading. We need good roads, good border posts. But unless the household care issues are addressed, women are not able to do that regional cross-border trade when they have to leave their children with nobody to fetch water for them. So I think these are the dynamics that you're talking about. It's a question of priorities and choice for our governments.
You mentioned you are a human rights lawyer.
Yes, I am.
And the discussion at the end of the seminar focused on violence against women. Do you believe that women are sufficiently protected under the current laws?
So at the global level, there is a robust treaty body system that is trying to address the issue of violence against women. Laws are important, but they are insufficient in themselves. They are insufficient if they are not translated to practical support by law enforcement. So you may have a law, but if the police are not trained, if the law courts do not take that law very seriously, if people do not have access to justice, we will continue to see the law being insufficient. So we really need to address the issue comprehensively and to also to address the issue of economic empowerment for women. My mother was married when she was 15. And it's clear that women need opportunities for education and economic empowerment, just like my mother did. Because if you have access to education and economic empowerment, you have possibilities for making choice. You make a choice about who to marry and when. You make a choice about a livelihood and where you want to live and what you want to do. Many women who are experiencing violence and abuse do not have choice, do not have options, because they are also economically and socially disempowered. And so the issue of violence against women is an issue that we need every citizen in this world to stand up and say zero tolerance, and where we need to integrate the issue into our various work. And I know that within the World Bank IMF group, there's been effort around costing, the cost, the economic cost of violence against women. We need to use that data in order to support our ministries of finance in making appropriate budget allocation decisions, because at times it's critical to do this research and this analysis simply to reveal the issue and to support governments to make appropriate choices for the protection of human rights of their citizens.
Hmm. Can I just ask you about technology? How important is technology to this issue of financial inclusion for women?
I think technology is no longer an option. It's now a public good. The critical challenge that we have is that we still have the digital divide. In developing countries, even if we are celebrating in Africa the mobile telephony and the penetration of mobile telephony, but it's not accessible to everybody. You may have the gadget, but you may not have somewhere to charge the phone. It might be a shared phone within the household. So there are privacy issues, there are ownership control issues. So yes, we are celebrating mobile telephony, but we need to continue to look at the digital divide on the infrastructure side that is still there. There are exciting innovations around financial inclusion. Exciting innovations that we see with mobile money, mobile banking, that we see with EcoCash in Zimbabwe, with M-Pesa, and really creating a revolution around how women are owning and are participating within the financial sector. But it's baby steps. As long as the whole financial inclusion and women's participation is still from the premise of women as consumers of policy, products, and innovation, we need to see women as co-creators, co-creators of technology, co-creators of content, co-creators of the products, to be owning, to be in the decision-making table, to be shareholders, just as much as they have to be part of the consumer bracket.
That was Nyaradzai Gumbanjanda, International Board Chair for ActionAid. You can watch the webcast of the IMF World Bank Annual Meeting Seminar entitled Making Macroeconomics Work for Women at imf.org. You can also hear more podcasts while you're there, or search for IMF Podcasts on your favorite podcast app.